I'm Caleb Brown, host of the Cato Daily Podcast. If you appreciate Cato's research and analysis, I'd like to ask you to financially support the Cato Daily Podcast and the broad mission of the Cato Institute to advance the ideals of individual liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. If you support our mission by becoming a new Cato Podcast sponsor or renew your sponsorship with an increased gift, one generous sponsor will be matching your gift dollar for dollar. That will double your impact. Visit cato.org/podcast sponsor and support our work. This is the only time of the year when I make this request, so I'm adding something as well. If you support Cato to the tune of $1,000 or more, I will gladly give you a shout out on the podcast, or you can designate an individual to receive all the benefits of that donation. Just visit cato.org/podcast sponsor to get started. And thank you. This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Tuesday, December 22nd, 2020. I'm Caleb Brown. What does full employment mean to the economists with the ear of President-elect Joe Biden? In a year of wild unemployment fluctuations driven by COVID-19, Cato's Ryan Bourne says the economists on the Biden team will focus more on achieving full employment by government intervention rather than, as libertarians would recommend, getting government out of the way. Whenever we talk about full employment as an economic goal, it gets my hackles up just a little bit because that very goal itself would seem to justify or provide a justification, often among others, for all manner of economic interventions. So how do the people advising and the people who are likely to continue advising President-elect Joe Biden, where are they on this notion of full employment?
Well, thanks, Caleb. It's really interesting. When Joe Biden's team of Council of Economic Advisers was appointed a couple of weeks ago now, the overwhelming reaction from progressive commentators and economists was to say that it was great news that Biden had chosen those particular candidates because they were committed to this concept of full employment. Now, that concept can be a bit of a minefield if you approach it as a non-economist, because to the unattuned ear, when you hear the term full employment, people think that means a situation where everyone is working, or perhaps a situation where everybody who wants a job or to be working a certain number of hours they desire is able to do so. Actually, what economists mean when they talk about full employment is something a little different. It really means a situation when unemployment is at what we describe as its natural rate. That means when the economy is operating at full tilt, we're fulfilling all our realistic potential. It's the unemployment rate that would result if the only people out of work were those between jobs at the time, or those who will find it near impossible to get jobs anyway, perhaps because of changing technologies. So there's a difference in the concept between how you might think that it should be defined and how economists define it. Now, Joe Biden has appointed three people to the Council of Economic Advisers, and all three have a history in labor market economics. And one of them, Jared Bernstein in particular, has been a big proponent of full employment as a goal of government. And that's significant for a couple of reasons. So the first is, if you aim for full employment as a goal, saying that you aim for full employment after 2019, when we were close to what economists might describe as full employment, suggests that you kind of want to try to achieve this objective in a different way. So in 2019, we pretty much got to full employment through a combination of having very, very liberal labor markets. We just had a big tax cut. There was much less in the way of regulation over the first couple of years of Trump's term. But in saying, you know, you're a proponent of full employment and putting yourself in contrast to that, you're really saying that you want to achieve a goal of as low unemployment as possible through different means. So it's a kind of commitment for a much more interventionist agenda. And second, and related to that, is Bernstein and others have kind of implied that even when we had very, very low unemployment back in 2019, we were still a long way from full employment. Now, what does that mean? Well, he seems to think that there are a lot of people who are underemployed, who would like to work more hours, and that if we ran the economy even hotter, we could draw people currently out of the labor force back into it. So the big takeaway is, I think amongst Biden's CEA picks, there's a big commitment for running macroeconomic policy very hot to try and reduce unemployment as far as possible, and more of a commitment to use government and government tools to try to put people who are out of work into work.
What does that look like practically? Do we have ideas from the incoming administration about what kind of interventions would be necessary to get there?
Yeah, and I think this is a good place to contrast kind of how a libertarian might approach this with how Biden's team might. So if you're somebody on with a libertarian kind of free market view of the world, you might say, okay, we got a low level of unemployment in 2019, but it could have been lower if only governments didn't do things like gum up labor markets through minimum wage laws, provision of unemployment insurance, bad local and state level land use policies that prevent housing being built where people want to move to. If you solved all of those problems and dragged away all those interventions, the natural rate of unemployment would be lower, and so more people would be in work when the economy was running at its full potential. And I think it's fair to say that Biden's team don't subscribe to that view. What they tend to mean when they're talking about full employment is two different things. So on the structural side, quite often they propose things like childcare subsidies to try and encourage more parents into the labor market, or active government efforts to try to help workers who are long-term unemployed retrain. So kind of quite activists on the structural side of things. And then at the same time, they suggest a much more activist fiscal policy, running bigger deficits through government spending more to try to create jobs through direct government projects, public works programs, or subsidies for jobs. Now, the problem with this from a kind of more free market perspective is that you can always create employment if you chuck money at things. If you, the Milton Friedman's famous example is if you gave construction workers spoons instead of shovels, you could create a whole hell of a lot more jobs, because it would be much more difficult for any given worker to contribute to building something like a canal. So you can always create jobs. What markets are incredibly good at, however, is creating jobs that serve our wants and needs. And they're a tool, a component that is used in a process of wealth creation. So to kind of summarize all that again, Joe Biden's team, I think, would be looking to try to reduce the natural rate of unemployment by subsidizing various activities, childcare and retraining efforts, whilst at the same time thinking that government spending can be used to get the economy as close as possible to its full potential, including in extremis, potentially even considering the government directly hiring workers on public work projects.
Now, when you talk about libertarian solutions to lowering efforts to lower the natural rate of unemployment, I remember the Obama administration, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, 5 years ago at least, put out a report on occupational licensing saying, look, there are significant costs here to, in particular, low-income workers. So that idea has not been off the radar of Democrats.
That's right. And actually, there are certain areas where Democrats have quite promising views that could improve the labor market. So one of them is the one that you mentioned there, is occupational licensing reform. And the second is land use and zoning reform, which if we had that at local level, enabling the building of more houses in places where people wanted to live, which tends to be places that are growing and creating job opportunities, then that could actually help lower the natural rate. The problem with both of those, of course, is that they are primarily issues which are delivered at state level. And so it's quite difficult to see, other than kind of talking about them and raising awareness of the problems that they cause, what could be done at a federal level, White House level, about dealing with those problems.
Right. But the I can remember the Biden campaign spoke, approvingly of ending subsidies to localities that have an overwhelming amount of single family home zoning. This was, of course, laughably derided by the president of the United States as an effort to destroy the suburbs, which is a tad unfair. But are you suggesting then that these advisors don't have these kinds of reforms on their radar?
Well, the role of the CEA, which is what we're talking about, I was talking about here in terms of the appointments. So the CEA is really a kind of mini think tank that operates within the White House. It was founded in legislation immediately after the Second World War. And their job is to provide the president with kind of up-to-date information about how the economy is doing, to help kind of analyze particular policies. But they don't develop policies as such. So the CEA actually, in this instance, could do useful work in terms of analyzing the costs of occupational licensing and zoning and land use planning laws, and of course suggest to the president. And you're right, on the margins, some federal grants to states could incorporate conditionality that would push in the direction of reform, particularly on zoning laws. But the CEA itself doesn't have the power to kind of create policy. It's there as a kind of mini think tank. And I think I'm fairly categorizing, and thank you for pushing back, because there are you're right, there are a few areas where Democrats in the past, in the Obama administration, have favored liberalizations that would help lower the natural rate. But I think when you listen to what the CEA appointees are saying, Cecilia Rouse, who was at Princeton, Jared Bernstein, a senior fellow at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, and Heather Bauchi from the Washington Center of Equitable Growth, when you listen to what they're saying, and when you read many of the things that have animated them over the past 4 years, they do tend to push in the direction of a more interventionist agenda on the labor market. Indeed, in some areas, things that one would imagine might actually raise the natural rate of unemployment. All three, I believe, are in favor of a $15 minimum wage, for example.
Joe Biden was famously, and I think very unfortunately, was a supporter of California's AB5. That was the law that made it very difficult for gig workers, for people who move from job to job very quickly on a freelance basis. It was devastating, especially during the pandemic.
Yeah, that's right. And a lot of progressive economists associated with the Democrat Party have wanted to kind of shift the balance in labor law to, as they perceive it, providing more security for workers. Of course, a lot of surveys of gig economy workers have found that people really do value the flexibility. Many people working in the gig economy are doing it as a second job. Some are doing it operating at times that they wouldn't be able to operate in ordinary employee roles. And of course, the economics of these business models kind of don't really work if you're having to provide the drivers or you know, the operators in your industry with a whole range of benefits, fixed benefits, as if they're full-time employees. So that would have been devastating. I think, though, that agenda is pretty much dead in the water if there is a Republican Senate. And even if there isn't a Republican Senate and there's a 50-50 split with the vice president at that time, Kamala Harris, having the deciding vote, I think Democrats would find it quite difficult to push through at a federal level some sort of legislation like that, because I think some of the more moderate voices in the Democratic Senate at that stage would probably resist implementing something like AB5 on the whole country. So yes, that was a worrying aspect of Joe Biden's campaign. I think it was, if nothing else, a kind of signal to many of the trade unions that supported him But I don't think that we'll see that in the next 4 years.
As difficult as it may be, leaving the pandemic aside, we had historically really low unemployment coming into 2020, and a wide range of different groups having record low unemployment. Why do Democrats here seem to want to push so hard for making big changes to labor market regulation?
Yeah, this is something that I found quite baffling over the past 3 to 4 years. As you say, unemployment was at historic lows. Unemployment for particular groups, Hispanic workers, Black workers, were at their lowest levels almost since those figures had been calculated in terms of Black unemployment. I believe it's the lowest level since the 1970s. And there does appear to be a disconnect here where the better the labor market was performing, the more in the way of labor market policy reforms Democrats wanted to make. Now, whether that's because they think that the labor market is so robust it could withstand a lot of more of what they perceive as pro-worker legislation, I don't know. But when you add it all up, it did add up to something pretty significant. We have the commitment to a $15 federal minimum wage, for example. As you say, a federal effort at some sort of California AB5 law equivalent on the gig economy. There are a lot of pro-union, pro-trade union policies within Joe Biden's platform, of course. The federal government effectively preempting right-to-work laws, for example. So combined, those represented a huge overhaul of US employment policy. And I think it's difficult to look at what occurred prior to the pandemic and to look at the United States performance in terms of its labor market relative to recent history. You know, for the first time, the labor market participation rate of prime age workers, 25 to 54 year old workers, was increasing sustainably for the first time since the 1980s. So it's difficult to look at that. It's difficult to look at the good performance relative to other countries and say that the labor market is an area in need of a huge policy overhaul.
Ryan Bourne occupies the R. Evan Scharf Chair for the Public Understanding of Economics at the Cato Institute. Learn more about becoming a Cato podcast sponsor. Visit cato.org/podcast sponsor.